Hi again, Medical Education Podcast listeners. This is Kevin Eva, the editor-in-chief of the journal, coming to you today from a crisp Vancouver day as we slowly settle into fall and have an opportunity to talk with you about a paper that's coming out in the November issue of the journal. I'm going to be speaking with Alex Cope, who is currently in her final year of training as a surgical fellow at the University of Leeds. But the data we'll be talking about was collected as part of her PhD, which was completed at Imperial College. The paper we'll be discussing is entitled UC, Teaching and Learning How to Interpret Visual Cues During Surgery. Alex, I know you've made time to call in on your day off, so I greatly appreciate it, and I'm excited to have the chance to talk about your paper.
Great.
There are so many things to talk about with this paper, as I mentioned to you before we started recording. You're both content-wise and methodologically, it's quite interesting. So obviously it makes sense though for us to start setting the context for people by asking you what problem you set out to solve in either your PhD more general or this paper in particular.
Okay, so, you know, my clinical interest is surgery, and teaching in the operating room is a really interesting and complex phenomenon because it's happening alongside the action of work, and there are so many different things at play. It's very seldom designed or thought out in advance. So my PhD was really looking at teaching and learning in the operating room and how that transpires in practice. This is one part of the PhD. I did interviews with surgeons and trainees and looked at those, but this study is using observational data from the operating room. Some of it was recorded through observational field notes with myself and an ethnographer. His interest is really in workplace-based learning. His experiences had previously been in the science classroom in schools, and he hadn't ever been inside an operating theatre before. But we paired ourselves up to give two different perspectives on the data and observed in the operating rooms and at the same time audio and video recorded surgeons during operations and then analysed that to look at teaching and learning.
And in this particular project, I know you were focused on the interpretation of visual cues during those teaching opportunities. Can you tell us a bit more about what led to that interest or why you were focused there in particular?
Okay, talking about visual cue interpretation is a relatively new idea, certainly in surgery. I feel really strongly that surgery, very little of it, is actually about motor skills and being amazing with your hands. It's about also being amazing with your eyes, and it's really about understanding what you're looking at. And that's something that's actually been quite poorly articulated in the surgical world because, you know, if you think about conventional surgical learning and skills practice, that kind of thing, that's all about handy work. Whereas actually, I think a lot of what we do as surgeons is identifying the correct plane for dissection and identifying structures in life. And you're identifying them before you're upon them. They might be hidden still behind several different layers of tissue. So you're identifying a little gleam or a shine of the tissues and thinking, that's the ureter behind there. And that takes time to learn. And it's probably one of the hardest bits of surgical learning is learning to identify stuff in life, in different states of health and disease. So that's really what this paper is about. It's about how do you learn that? Is it just through seeing many, many cases over the course of training? And training in the UK is long, really long. I've been training now 14 years and I'm not fully qualified as an attending yet, although hopefully next year. So, you know, is this learning to identify things, learning visual cue interpretation, is it just learned through seeing many cases? And actually, what we found in this data as part of this project is teaching in this content area does happen in the operating room. It is something that's taught. It is something that's learned, not just by seeing many cases, but faculty and the trainee, there's an interaction that happens between them that is around this working out what you're looking at.
Well, and as soon as you start talking about those things, looking at what we're looking at, it becomes apparent without a great deal of thought how methodologically challenging it might be to examine that issue. Potentially one of the reasons that it hasn't been attacked extensively in the past. Once you start getting into visual cues, it's always a worry that people are translating ineffectively when they start trying to talk about what it is they're looking at. I'd love to get you to talk a little bit about the videos that you collected, and in part because, to my my recollection, this is the first paper that we've published anyway where the data in part are presented in video form. And so I'll just warn our listeners that to fully appreciate the paper, you'll need to go onto the website and actually have the opportunity to watch some of the videos that were collected. What did you have to overcome to enable that methodology to be implemented? And I'll just ask a second question at the same time. Do you feel like you were able to see things that you couldn't have had you not gone so fully into the visual domain?
Yeah, for sure. So just to explain a little bit to the listener about, of course, there are lots and lots of ethical issues that surround this type of data collection. So the ethics approval that we had was to use either a camera that was built into the light's handle of the operating lamp. So for an open operation, you would be able to see the same field as the surgeon where the light is over the top of it. But this paper is actually based upon laparoscopic keyhole surgical data, where the camera, it's an internal image of the patient's body. So the patient's unidentifiable. What you're looking at is the tips of the instruments being used by the surgeons. And then we audio recorded the surgeon's voice from a little wireless microphone worn under their gown, and then synced these two tracks together to, if you like, recreate what was going on in the operating theatre. But those video clips paired with the audio, in order to perform this analysis, these little clips were watched possibly hundreds of times, each little clip. Now, the whole operation might have been, say, 45 minutes or an hour, but each operation was broken into tiny little clips, which may have only lasted a couple of seconds. And we started off by classifying, you know, where did we think visual cue interpretation was going on and was it being taught? And then we started to analyze how was it being taught. And that required, really, really detailed replaying of those clips over and over again, looking very carefully at the words being used by the surgeon trainer and the surgeon trainee, as well as looking at the movements that they were producing at the same time with the tips of the instruments inside the patient's body. This kind of data, it is quite challenging actually to write it up for publication because, exactly as you say, I suppose it's very difficult to put down on paper any of the raw data. Unlike interview quotes, which are naturally lent to production in a paper format, video clips are challenging. So I think one of the attractions is that I knew that there was an online supplement and all the rest of it, and I felt that would provide a good means of presenting the reader with some of the raw data for them to have a look at themselves to evidence our analysis and what it is that we're purporting to have found.
And with respect to what you found, you may need to get into some of those details to answer the other question of what did this technique enable you to do that you might not have otherwise? So did any of your findings in hindsight depend on using the video, or do you think you could have gotten at them another way?
No, without a doubt. So the paper is really about a phenomenon that I call co-construction, which is this, if you like, a discussion between the trainer and the trainee about what it is that they're looking at. And for a lot of the time, that is conducted through words. But occasionally, and this is what really came to light and what makes the data very special, is sometimes one half of that dialogue is actually being produced by specific movements of the surgical instruments. And maybe it's because I'm effectively an insider in that practice that I know what those movements mean. So opening up an instrument called a Peatlin behind a structure and moving it up and down, the trainee is signaling, signing, I think there's enough room behind here to place a clip. So they are signaling that they have found a structure and that they are preparing to clip it. Now, that's not articulated verbally at all, although the trainer might say in response to that, yeah, that's right. Yeah, you've got plenty of space. Go on and clip that. But the trainee's side of that dialogue is produced entirely with the gesture of the instrument. You know, that was only apparent when you looked very closely at the video, and the timing, the syncing of that video and the audio track were absolutely key to seeing that those movements happened before the trainer had actually said, yeah, I think you can go ahead and clip that. The trainee was already signaling that that's what they were going to do.
And having made these observations and started to identify various forms of co-construction, do you have any particular advice at this stage for surgical educators or trainees who might be able to better understand and deliberately use some of these co-construction techniques that you've identified?
So we talk about in the paper something called guided co-construction, which we really looked at the types of words that we used, looking at dialogue between trainer and trainee. And sometimes the trainer was using words of much more surety, as if they were guiding the trainee to see what they were seeing. So we used the term epistemic modality, a kind of certainty of language. And very often in guided co-construction, we saw that the trainer was using language that was much more sure than the trainee's language. We felt that this was guiding the trainee to see what the trainer was seeing. And I think that that can be used in a more mindful, educational way. In our data set, you know, I don't know whether that was being used purposefully and mindfully as an educational technique, and I rather suspect not. But actually, I think it's a very useful thing for the trainee to realize and acknowledge that actually what's happening here is that they are receiving guidance from the trainer with suggestions of what it is that they might be seeing. So yes, I think that can be used more mindfully by faculty in the course of intraoperative training. The trouble is, you know, surgical operating, it's also a place of work. So it's difficult to know to what extent that can be mindfully adapted for use in the workplace, because sometimes the operation is just continuing along its way and people are just getting on with doing it.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. It reminds me too of the long-time discussions about role modeling and the importance of being explicit in the reason for undertaking certain behaviors. And I wonder if you saw any indications that there might have been some miscommunication ever when it was purely nonverbal, or did it appear that the moments were interpreted effectively as they arose?
Yeah, I mean, one of the great difficulties of laparoscopic surgery is that, you know, you can't point very easily to structures. And you're often using what we call deictic words, like this or that. Mm-hmm. And the assumption of the faculty member is that the trainee knows what that is, that that is the same thing that the faculty is speaking of. And that's a great difficulty with laparoscopic surgery. It's remote. The trainer may be holding on to the camera. They might not have an instrument to point with, and that can lead to misunderstandings between faculty and trainee. And you often see quite a lot of repairs where perhaps they weren't speaking exactly of the same thing. So repairs in the language, in the conversation. You see also a lot of adjectives, similes and metaphors being used to try and help with that, to try and ensure that the faculty and the trainee are actually talking about the same thing.
Right.
I think you probably see more of that in laparoscopic surgery than you do in open surgery, but I think there's definitely more research work to be done there. So,
yeah, well, and as I alluded to at the top, this paper, I think, opens up many brand new avenues of potential research that could be quite informative in terms of helping us understand those communication skills, helping us understand the nonverbal activities, helping us understand what you've called co-construction and the interpretation of visual cues. And so I appreciate that even more than usual, this paper has more in it that we could talk about than we could ever possibly do justice to in a brief conversation. So I will recommend both the paper and the videos online to our listeners, and we'll hope that as this last year of training wraps up for you, you have the time and enthusiasm to continue the work.
Oh, thank you. Thanks, Matt.
My pleasure. Thanks again for making the time to chat. Before we sign off, I'll just remind our listeners that we've been discussing a paper entitled UC, Learning to Interpret